On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, a stacked weekend recap with a mop, three sweeps, and a whole lot of ball. Aaron Judge on the IL with an elbow problem. How concerned should Yankees fans be? Well, it depends on how much you like watching Giancarlo Stanton try and play the outfield. We also chat about Hall of Fame weekend, which was just spectacular. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who thinks that the Yankees should trade for a working right arm for Aaron Judge. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And if you could, like, you know, copy and paste a ligament or a limb, rather, that would be the most valuable acquisition possible.
Yeah, I think in this case, especially troubling to find one that fits someone Aaron Judge's size, I think would be pretty challenging. But we are going to get into trade deadline.
running around with Alexi Amarista's right arm looking like a T-Rex.
hey, if it works, it works, right? If it fits, it ships. I mean, at this point, we need Aaron Judge to be able to throw a baseball. We are going to talk about that and so much more. The Yankees made a couple of trades. We had a few sweeps and even a mop. I'm wearing my A's hat today. Did you see what Nick Kurtz did on Friday? Because it was kind of ridiculous. But Jake, as you mentioned with your joke at the top, we must begin in the Bronx. That is our opener.
The drama began Saturday morning when Yankee reporters strolled into the clubhouse. Not me. I was not there. But the real ones, they strolled into the clubhouse and they looked at the lineup and they noticed who was missing from the lineup: Aaron Judge. And given that the Yankees had just had an off day and they were facing left-hander Ranger Suarez, it stood to reason that something was amiss, something was wrong. And that turned out to be the case during pregame, when Aaron Boone, skipper of the Managers, said to the world, Aaron is dealing with some discomfort in his elbow. And now discomfort in the elbow, in our world of baseball, those are some scary, scary words. And so for the entirety of the game, in which the Yankees got waxed by the Phillies, Yankee land was understandably stressed about Aaron Judge and his elbow. During that game, he went and received imaging. During the highly anticipated Aaron Boone press conference after, we got the news that it was not a UCL injury that would require Tommy John, but rather a strain of the flexor mass.
Yes. Yeah. The flexor mass, which everybody knows exactly what that is. Of course, when we're talking about a player of Aaron Judge's stature in every sense, we are quick to running to our Google machines. What is this? What does this mean? Is this worse than the UCL? Is he not going to throw a baseball for years and years? No. Everyone relax. So, Jake, before we get into what this means for the New York Yankees on the baseball field, what is your, as someone who has had a serious UCL injury and continues to have frequent pain in your right arm, why don't you tell us a little bit about this injury? Not that you are a doctor by any stretch.
So the UCL is the big old boy, right? That's like going to run down through your elbow, like from your forearm through your elbow. And that's what goes kablooey when dudes need Tommy John surgery. Now, the flexor mass is a little bit further down the forearm and kind of is around the UCL and protects it. Jeff Passan had a good tweet kind of explaining the purpose of the flexor mass. Jeff, who wrote a whole book about the arm, called the arm. It acts as almost like a stabilizer, like a brake, like a cushion for the UCL. So if you start to have issues with your flexor mass, it is kind of a harbinger, it portends bad things for your UCL. And so we have examples of guys, pitchers specifically, having flexor mass issues and then needing Tommy John down the road. That's Jacob DeGrom. That's Walker Buehler. There are a number of others. And so when you have an issue with the flexor mass, you basically just want to rest it, heal it up, because if you don't, there is a risk that you could have further injury to the more crucial ligament.
Yeah, and the other thing is, it's a scary thing because it is interconnected to the UCL, but there are also cases of guys, especially if you kind of catch it early enough, where you can rest it and you can come back. Logan Gilbert is an example, right? We're hoping he stays healthy the rest of the year. But that's one who, you know, he went on the IL earlier this season with Seattle, and it was very scary because Logan Gilbert's never had an elbow injury. He rested it for a bit, came back. Now he's still throwing 96. And, you know, he's not, doesn't obviously look like his best self, but he's back. So there's also a pass back. Now we're talking about a position player here, but it is relevant because the whole reason we even got to this point is because Aaron Judge couldn't throw. And even though Aaron Judge said he felt this for the first time during the series in Toronto, he was kind of gutting it out until he couldn't, until he realized, if I need to make a play, I cannot right now. And though even, and even at that point, it sounds like he was still arguing, hey, I'm Aaron Judge. Don't you want me in the lineup? Can I just DH and just play through this? They were like, yes, but also there's this other big guy that hits the ball really hard, and we really don't want him to play in the outfield. So, now, more on that in a second. But the point is, it sounds like they would prefer, because of what you just described, that there is a path to rest and getting him back to throwing a baseball in the somewhat near future, that they're going with this path, which is still not a sure thing, but it is at least a first step.
I would describe this as good, bad news. Right? Aaron Judge will continue to hit for the rest of the season, right? Like that is a win. Now, what does that mean, right? So I think it is worth notice, like talking about why he can hit and even if he can't throw, right? So first of all, it's a different movement. When you're holding a ball, the ball is larger than the grip on the bat, and that puts more strain on the ligaments in your arm. Whereas if you're just holding a bat, the grip is looser, it's lighter, it's smaller, and so you're not kind of activating the same type of things in your arm. And Judge kind of talked about that a little bit when he was asked about it during his press conference, or during his scrum, rather. I don't think that Giancarlo Stanton being unable to play the outfield has any bearing on Judge going on the IL. I think this is just the Yankees deciding to play this safe for now. There is no reason to push it. At this point, better or worse, the division feels kind of out of reach. The Blue Jays at present, I believe, have what, a 6.5-game lead? 7-game lead? 5-game lead? What is it?
5.5.
It's a lot. 5.5-game lead. Yeah, the Yankees could come back, sure. But it's about making sure that Judge is able to throw, giving themselves the best chance at Judge being able to throw during the postseason. That's kind of where we're at now. And I think giving him 10 days to just kind of chill makes a lot of sense. Now, Aaron Boone was pretty optimistic that it will be pretty close to 10 days on the shelf before he comes back and hits. And when he does return, he will DH and supplant Stanton from that spot, understandably. Now let's talk about what it means for the Yankees roster construction, right? Because I would say it, and you, this was your very interesting takeaway. What a hilariously specific problem for the Yankees to need to answer.
Yeah, because obviously this is still better than Aaron Judge not being available, right? Just a basic Aaron Judge injury is catastrophic for a million reasons. But this, where it's like, you have this guy that essentially now has to DH, not just that he has to DH, it's that he is still seemingly one of your best hitters. We, of course, saw that down the stretch last year.
You're talking about Stanton, to be clear.
I'm talking about Stanton, right? And so this is just a situation where you only have so many DH spots and you're not going to, okay, are you teaching someone to? It's also hilarious now when you think about the contrast with the Red Sox. In terms of like a some sort of roster logjam that I'm sure the Yankees fans have been laughing about. And it seemed like some of these things had been solved by some of the transactions they've made over the past year that kind of put them in better position to move these guys around and use them in their best possible spots and still have reasonable defensive lineups. We move Judge to right. He's no longer having to play center. And, you know, we don't have to deal with Soto's terrible defense anymore. And yet here we are where Dominguez stinks in left and Grisham is like playing really well, so you want him to play center, but then you got to have Bellinger and Stan's got to be in there somewhere. And so Aaron Judge not being able to play the field is really makes Aaron Boone's job really interesting.
How much money per game would the Yankees pay for a second DH spot once Judge gets back? Like, what's the value of that? Like, a mil a game?
Right. We're basically asking, like, so that they could just trade for Bader or whatever, and Bader doesn't have to hit. And it's just like, Bader can go play the outfield, and your DA, someone is designated to hit for Harrison Bader or whoever the equivalent is, and it's the two DH spot. I don't know. I mean, I've thought about this at time over the years when we've had some situations like this where teams have multiple bad defenders, good hitters like this. But that said, yeah, that's kind of where they are. Now, it's still too early to know exactly. I mean, this is the thing, though. We are still not in a stage to we actually know when Aaron Judge is going to be able to throw again. Because the way he's describing it does not sound like that's going to happen in 10 days, even if he's back in the lineup. That said,
he was not
the
saying,
longer... Yeah.
To be clear, this was not, oh, yeah, like it hurt a little bit. I felt a little something. He straight up said, I could not throw a baseball more than 60 feet. Yeah. Right? Like, does that make me think that Aaron Judge is going to be able to throw full gas in 2 weeks? Honestly, no. I would set the realistic over-under at Aaron Judge back in the outfield, like September 1st. Is that too soon? I just don't think this is, like, he's not going to get off the IL and go directly to the outfield. They've already said that, right? I just think that these are the types of things that can be finicky, that can take time. And the priority now for the Yankees is making sure that he can throw during the playoffs. And that's just because you don't want Giancarlo Stanton out in the outfield. He has not played the outfield since 2023. Aaron Boone said they're going to run him through some drills. Now, whether the drill, like running Stanton through some drills this week in the outfield, is that just like to be nice?
Here's the thing.
Yeah, like
this is why.
You can do it.
But this is why this is compelling and delicate, right? Because this is not, oh no, we have to put Kyle Schwarber out there. He's not very good. It is that, but it's also, oh my God, is Giancarlo Stanton going to get hurt because we're asking him to run around the outfield? It's a very real thing. This is not just how bad your defense might be if your corner outfielders are Stanton and Dominguez, which, alert, really bad. Like, that would be one of the worst combinations of corner outfielders we've seen in a very, very long time. And Trent Grisham would really be making his money's worth out there in center. But it's more of like the actual risk of this other important hitter that you know you've had to be so delicate with for so long. And you thought you finally got a position in the roster where you wouldn't have to think about that anymore. And now maybe you do. Now, is your offense good enough to where you can have Giancarlo Stanton just on the bench instead and not starting him? I mean, that seems absurd also. So I don't know what the correct answer is. Obviously, with some of the trades that we can now talk about that they just made, bringing in Ryan McMahon, bringing in Amed Rosario, that gives the team Aaron Boone, some other flexibility with more competent major leaguers that he can move around. Now, I know those are infielders. It doesn't necessarily impact Stan's defensive moves, but it does give them a little bit more room. But Stan's on fire right now, you know, and so you're not going to want to take him out of the lineup, even if you do have other good hitters. So, like I said, it's a very specific problem that they're going to have to solve for some undetermined amount of time. But I think we should also talk about these other trades and what those do for the Yankees.
Yeah, we decided to lead with it on this show because best player in world not being able to throw baseball like that, it feels kind of significant, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, it is. And that's the thing. Like, and also, even though we don't know where exactly this is going, they're going to have to make some sort of decision soon. And we don't know if, and by the way, Yankees fans too, it's weird. They've had a lot of position players hurt their elbows, some of which had to get Tommy John, you know, Didi and Glaber. And then some of which we had, there was a very similar scare with Juan Soto last year. He missed one series and then he was back and that was fine. So we've had versions of this. This clearly is more serious than that. That said, you're trying to ballpark when we're going to see him throw again. I just have no idea. We have no idea how he's going to feel when he starts trying this throwing progression.
So the one last thing I want to mention about this. So Judge missed a significant stretch in 2023. I think he was out for about 2 months after he dunked his toe into the outfield wall at Dodger Stadium. And when he went out, the Yankees kind of fell apart in large part because the offense was terrible. The offense this year is way, way better suited to weather an extended period without Aaron Judge. And if it's only 10 days, it really doesn't worry me. I understand that, like, there are some tough watches maybe in the lineup sometimes, but let us not forget, the 2023 Yankees were an offensive abomination. They finished like 22nd in the league in offense. The only other player with an OPS plus above 100 besides Aaron Judge was Gleyber Torres. 100, like above league average hitter. There's only one. It was Gleyber Torres. This year, the other Yankees who are above league average, Goldschmidt still somehow, Jazz, Dominguez barely, Trent Grisham, Ben Rice, Cody Bellinger, Giancarlo Stanton. Like, they're going to be, obviously, when you lose Aaron Judge, like, it's a rainy day. But I just think that this is not full catastrophe compared to what it could have been and what it once was. The Yankees also got some reinforcements this weekend, swinging two deals. Let's go from the less significant one to the more significant one. Ahmed Rosario, utility man, going from the Nationals to the Yankees in exchange for Clayton Beter, a pitcher in AAA, who I believe has been working out of the bullpen. He had a little cameo with the Yankees last year. Former top prospect, came over to the Yankees in the Joey Gallo deal, has kind of plateaued in the upper minors a little bit. And then a Dominican Summer League outfielder named Braum Martinez. Not Brown. B-R-O-W-M. Braum. Jordan, you live in Cleveland. Are people excited for the Braum this season?
That's all they talk about. It doesn't matter what's going on with the Guardians or the Cavs. It's just Braums all day. Let's talk about Ahmed Rosario. I like Clayton Beter, by the way. Good job the Nationals getting a live arm there. But this is pretty simple, right? He is just going to replace Peraza. And I know Peraza has been replaced by Ryan McMahon, but I don't really see a place for Peraza as the bench right-handed infielder with Ahmed Rosario, who has been doing this exact role now for 5 years pretty well. Am I misreading that at all? Like, I feel like that's kind of the end of Peraza, at least for this year.
Correct. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. So now let's get to the other more significant one, which is more significant for a lot of reasons. So yeah, Rosario, like, good. Like, that's a very straightforward fit. He has continued to hit lefties well. The funny one about Rosario is that his defensive metrics this year are horrific. Those have kind of fluctuated over the years for him as he's kind of bounced between positions. But that is relevant to our next trade, which is them getting Ryan McMahon, who is a third baseman and has been in the Rockies organization since we were in high school, right? I mean, he's the same draft year as us, I guess, technically. 2013 draft out of high school in California. Has been with the Rockies for over 10 years. And now, and extended, you know, just signed a long-term extension with them. He is an interesting player where we have seen, because he has real physical tools, we have seen him look like he's been an all-star, right? But the contact ability has really plummeted in recent years. Of course, the splits at college, you know, the core splits are pretty harsh with him as well. But he is a very, very good defender at third base. He does still have some left-handed power. And again, who cares? He's going to be batting eighth. And he already gave him one big swing this weekend. Like, the bar for him offensively could not be lower, considering what Peraza was giving them.
Yeah.
And I think even with his flaws, he's going to strike out in some big spots and you're going to be like, oh, why'd they get this guy with all the strikeouts? No. His upside is so much greater than not just Peraza, but honestly, probably a lot of the guys they could have gotten at this deadline. And he's obviously stabilizes them defensively. I think him being on a long-term contract and them kind of committing, like Ryan McMahon's our third baseman, is compelling. I think that is an interesting thing to just think about big picture. But in the short term, it makes a lot of sense.
As far as 30-year-old, 9-year MLB veterans go, who have a 92 career OPS plus, there is a lot of room for improvement here. One, getting out of the Coors Effect whirlpool where you're dealing with different pitch movements home and away. Plus, guess what? Do you folks agree that maybe being on Not the Rockies could be helpful for a player emotionally and developmentally? Like, the Yankees hitting coaches are probably going to help Ryan McMahon. That will happen. And so there is offensive potential here. Maybe he doesn't get it. But look, we literally did this with DJ LeMahieu, right? Like, yes, people will remember the end of the LeMahieu era in New York for his inability to touch his toes and looking like a cement cinder block. But he was amazing for the Yankees after he came over from Colorado, in part because he adopted he was in a better environment around smarter coaches and it was more competitive. And I think something similar could happen with Ryan McMahon. Now, just quickly from the Rockies perspective, I was shocked that this happened. I may even have said this on the show that I was surprised Ryan McMahon was being considered a trade candidate because history told us that the Rockies are baseball's North Korea. They don't interact with anybody. They just sit on their couch scrolling on their phone. And for them to deal McMahon, I was pretty floored. I think that it is indicative of this season of historic losing being a potential reason for change. Now, I don't think the Rockies are suddenly going to tear it all up, trade everybody away, and become the most analytically inclined front office in the world. But I do think that enduring so many L's has led to a slight change in approach. And I think we see that here with the McMahon trade.
Yeah. And I think, right, you really push back on the possibility on the pod. And as you pointed out, based on history, that was a fair take because that they needed to prove to us that they were willing to act rationally. This is acting rationally for a team heading for 120 losses. It's trading for two pitching prospects, Griffin Herring, who's having one of the best lefty from LSU drafted recently, who's having one of the best seasons of any minor league pitcher. Josh Gross is another kind of lesser heralded prospect, but still an arm that's had a good season. So again, are those guys going to save the Rockies franchise? Probably not. But also McMahon, because of his contract and because of his flaws, didn't necessarily have massive trade value. So I think that all things considered, I think getting an arm like Griffin Herring is a good outcome. Do they now have to go develop Griffin Herring into anything of value? Yes, which why would I trust the Rockies can do that? That said, I think it is still a step in the right direction of logic and reasoning for the Colorado Rockies. How many more trades are they actually going to make before the deadline? I guess we will see how dramatic it goes. Now, last thing on the Yankees, they did play baseball this weekend. Yeah.
1 second. Can you imagine being Griffin Herring? You're just enjoying spectacular season in one of the most advanced pitching development organizations in baseball. You're getting to live in Beacon, New York in the Hudson Valley, which over the summer is just a splendid place, incredible weather, beautiful views. And you get a call. You're like, hey, you're actually on the Rockies now. And you're going to their high A affiliate, which is in Fresno?
Aren't they Northwest League? This is the thing. This is how little I've thought about the Rockies minor league. Yes. Spokane. Fresno's low A. So
Spokane
he could go
is
to
nice.
Spokane. Or,
Spokane
or
is nice.
You know what? I actually would guess, and for logistics and convenience sake, keep him in Hartford. Keep him close.
Set him up.
Make him a yard goat. And Griffin Herring, in all likelihood, you will get to the major leagues a lot faster than you would have with the Yankees. So hopefully that is good news for you. All right, enough about the Rockies. Last thing on the Yankees, they did play baseball this weekend, and there were other problems with the Yankees, particularly on the first 2 days, where they gave up a billion runs to the Phillies, 12 on Friday, 9 on Saturday. Schwarber, Harper, up and down the lineup. Ranger Suarez dominated them on Saturday. They did bounce back on Sunday in a pretty big way. Wheeler with a rare hiccup. Carlos looked pretty good. And the Yankees, the actual A-tier bullpen guys really showed up on Sunday, which was impressive. Yankees do salvage on Sunday, win 4-3. But still, it was not, I know they were so focused on the trades and the Judge stuff that it was hard to focus on it. And yeah, but the Phillies are good. So, it is what it is, but not exactly the most. That was still a weekend where you lost even more ground on the Blue Jays, right? They made their lead even bigger.
When Rodon allows two solo shots at the top of the second yesterday with Wheeler on the mound, it's like, well, this is over. And so I do think the Yankees deserve a little credit for, bouncing back from that, scoring four runs off Wheeler in the bottom of the second and then winning that game and holding on. Because otherwise, I mean, we're full panic mode this morning as far as the Yankees are concerned.
Yeah. All right. Before we take a break, we got to talk about the most impressive individual performance, not just of the weekend, but of the season, but of the decade, of the century, of the history of Major League Baseball. Okay, let's put this into context, Jake Mintz. Nick Kurtz, the first baseman for the A's of Yolo County.
Yolo.
Had a decent little ball game on Friday evening.
Nice now, day out.
Let's set the stage. Who is this man? Who's man's? By the way, the A's mopped the Astros, okay? And we're going to get to that in a second, but we're going to focus on Kurtz because I know I did tweet that it was the most stunning mop of the season, which I stand by because this is still an A's team that ranked 29th in ERA coming into the weekend and doesn't have a lot of pitching, and they outscored the Astros 32-7. I know the entire Astros team's on the IL. They're going through it. That's fine. Still on the road, winning four games in a row is hard. But let's talk about Friday. So here's the thing. It's not like Kurtz is a total nobody. He was the fourth overall pick last year. He had one of the most, honestly, accomplished college careers of the 21st century at Wake Forest. He was also one of the best hitters in baseball for the last 2 months. And I wrote a feature that went up 2 hours before he went 6-for-6 with four home runs. And I made the point after he won AL Player of the Week, hey guys, he's actually been slugging nearly 800 for 2 months now. And we should probably be paying attention to this. Now, did I expect him to have one of the greatest games of baseball history? No, but the timing certainly worked out.
Hell yeah.
This dude has been on fire. He has now, because Jacob Wilson exists and is hitting 350 for most of his rookie season and was the starting shortstop of the American League in the All-Star game, it was like, oh yeah, they also got this Kurtz guy. Wow, cool, young Kurtz. Like, no, hold on. Kurtz is not just having a good rookie season. He's having one of the greatest rookie months ever in July. This is all before he goes 6-for-6. Okay, this is all already true. And then what he does on Friday was preposterous. And yes, the last home run was against Cooper Hemel. And yes, he was not facing the best Astros pitchers by any stretch. But he had proven what he was capable of leading up to this game against some great pitchers. And then it just all came together in an individual showcase of power to all fields that was just jaw-dropping.
Nick Kurtz played his final college baseball game 421 days ago. This has all happened supremely quick for him. If you go to his Instagram, his profile picture is still him on Wake Forest, probably because he hasn't thought to change it because it's only been a year. That he has elevated into this quickly is something that none of us saw coming. It was always his ceiling just because of his power. Power was always there. But coming out of college, man, like, there were real concerns. He had never hit with wood. Do you remember that narrative? It was like Nick Kurtz is an aluminum merchant. He can't use lumber.
Well, so I actually want to address that because that's also related to the other part of the Kurtz story. And now, first on your point about how fast this has happened, my favorite part of the story I wrote is talking to Brent Rooker about this. Now, Brent Rooker was also a legendary college player, and it took him 6 years to become anything of relevance in the major leagues with multiple organizations, right? He was not a top five pick, but he was still a early pick and a prospect that you would think if he was that advanced and he was dominating college that it would maybe come together. And this quote from Rooker just sums it up. He said, I was a very, very good college player. If you had thrown me in the big leagues at 22 years old, I would have had absolutely no chance. And that is, I mean, that sums it up. That doesn't just speak to Nick Kurtz. It speaks to Jacob Wilson. It speaks to guys like Lawrence Butler. It speaks to all these other young hitters, even Soderstrom, right? They have so many young hitters that are just remarkably advanced and impactful that gives them hope. Now, we don't have to have the whole big conversation about who's rooting for this guy. Again, it's just still so weird to talk about A's players. I don't know. Is Sacramento, of course, excited to watch this guy? Of course they are. Is Vegas thinking about Kurtz? I have no idea. But I want to get back to what you said about the aluminum and, oh, no, he couldn't hit with wood. Because I talked to him about this. This didn't make it in my story. But it's because he was always injured. And this is also part of, as we continue to track Kurtz moving forward, he didn't play in the summer because he had, I believe he's had surgery on both shoulders. The reason he stopped pitching in high school is because he had a labrum injury on his left shoulder. And then he had a right shoulder injury his freshman year that prevented him from playing after that summer. Then he broke his rib at the end of his sophomore year. As we remember, he was unable to play in the College World Series. That prevented him from playing on Team USA after that sophomore summer. And then obviously after his junior summer, he was already drafted. So he was obviously always working with Wood in the offseason behind the scenes. But yeah, he did not have stats in a summer league or with the collegiate national team. That said, I mean, you watch him take batting practice. It's unbelievable. Like he is, we talked about this when we talked about the Derby. Guys that can go to the opposite field where it looks they're hitting it as far as you can pull a ball, that's when you know they have ridiculous juice. And we saw that on display even with the Crawford boxes. The balls he was hitting to Houston in Houston over the weekend were ridiculous. They would be balls that if a right-handed hitter was like, man, he crushed that. You see it in BP, you see it in the games. And it's a hell of a bat to build around. And yeah, he's striking out a ton, which I think he's going to kind of figure out how to cut down at least to some degree. But when you're making this amount of impact, when you are connecting with the ball, it's fine if you're striking out 28-38% of the time.
A's mop the Astros. I don't really have a whole lot else to say about the rest of the series. They just kicked their butt. 32-7 combined score. Astros are all hurt. I do, before we take a break, I would like to talk about Nick Kurtz's nickname. The Big Amish.
Yes.
Okay. I would like to talk about the Big Amish for a number of different reasons. Number one, why? Why the Big Amish? Answer, Nick Kurtz is from Lancaster, not Lancaster. That's the most important thing here. Lancaster County. Lancaster County, Pennsylvania has the single largest Amish population in the world. Approximately 45,000. Amishers, Amish, I guess it's just Amish. Amish folks live in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. Okay. That is approximately 6% of the county's total population. Pretty significant. If you've ever driven in and around Lancaster, Pennsylvania, you've seen them. You've seen the Amish with the buggies bugging around. Now, Nick Kurtz, importantly, not Amish.
No.
Not no. Amish. So my first thought about this was, that's kind of like calling me the big Puerto Rican in a way. Like I'm not that. Like, or like Dave Parker, who wore the Jewish Star of David, like we ain't call him the big Jewish guy. You know, so is there something offensive maybe here about calling Nick Kurtz the Big Amish? And I thought and I chewed on it and I thought about it. And then you know what I realized? Amish don't know. They're not listening to the pod.
That's the thing.
Do they do pods?
I don't think they are. And if they are, maybe they're proud of him. I don't know. I have no sense for, clearly Kurtz has embraced this to some degree. I know some of his wish for his teammates. Yeah, they're churning butter. This? I mean, it's,
they have a butter churning celebration. Yeah.
I mean, I also love this because, this getting in the broadcast calls of all these home runs was absolutely the first exposure to this nickname for 99% of people. And I love that they had to be like, I'm sorry, what did they just call him? Like, what was that? Did I hear that correctly?
Kurtz raises a barn. See ya. Yeah.
So, yeah, no. Hey, I got plenty of horse and buggies out here in Ohio too, but not as many as in Lancaster. As you mentioned, those numbers are pretty staggering. Anyway, we'll see if that nickname catches on. It seems like he's embracing it.
If you're listening,
which is quite hilarious.
If you're listening and you're Amish, first of all.
Wow, already thank you for listening. That requires some dedication.
First of all, thank you so much. And how? Second of all, is this offensive to you? Is it not? Is this cultural appropriation for the Amish? Just something to think about. Let us know. baseballbarbercast@gmail.com.
Yeah, I might have mentioned this on the pod a few years ago, or it would have been a long time ago, but there was, because I lived, again, adjacent to Amish country in college, we went to a musical that was put on in Amish country about an Amish baseball player, and it was called The Home Game. And I have like the playbill somewhere. Now, this was about a pitcher, not about a guy with, you know, prodigious raw power. Like a scout was driving through and saw this kid throwing the ball really hard, and he ended up going to the big leagues. It was incredible. And it was a musical. It was amazing. I'll have to go. If this continues to be a talking point, I will find that playbill,
yeah,
and we'll review The Home Game. Anyway, you can Google it.
Until then, all right, Nick Kurtz will be carrying the Amish WBC team on his back, literally, because it is a big old back. Let's take a break. And when we return, we'll run through the sweeps and the other notable series of the weekend.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Before we get to the sweeps, just one more thing on Kurtz that just absolutely killed me. So he didn't even play on Sunday, which is so funny. Rest day for Kurtz. This is from Martin Gallegos, his beat reporter for MLB.com. Kotze said he's been, quote, doing a lot of running lately and just dealing with general soreness, fatigue in his lower half. He's available off the bench. Ultimately, he did not play. This is amazing. Now, it's partially related to, you know, he had a hip injury earlier this year. I mentioned all of his shoulder issues. So we're going to have to hope that the A's can keep Kurtz on the field. That said, if he keeps hitting home runs, then Kotze mentioned too much running. Oh, my God. How many times I got to run around these bases? This is exhausting.
How many jogged circles is equal to one full gas sprint down the first baseline? It's more of a distance runner.
It's a fair question. This is also concerning for Giancarlo Stanton, right? He's going to keep hitting home runs, but that's the problem. He's been trotting around those bases for years.
Yeah.
He's getting really tired. So
G should opt out of running around the bases.
Careful.
Just hit it and just walk back to the dugout.
Yeah, yeah. We designated runner for Giancarlo. We need a designated. He needs a designated fielder and a designated runner, just to keep everybody safe. All right, we have a lot more baseball to talk about. Let's get to it. How sweep it is.
Clean up, everybody.
There is no shame in getting swept. I never got swept. You guys got swept.
Mets, the New York Mets, taking revenge on the traitorous Giants who left the city of New York way back when. The Mets fans saying, you left, we know you left, and we're going to go out to where you live and kick your butt. And that's what happened. Mets winning 8-1 on Friday, 2-1 on Saturday, and 5-3 on Sunday. The starting pitching for the New York Mets was good. That really is the key for this team. I know that's not surprising, but having Clay Holmes good on Friday, Peterson good on Saturday, Senga good enough on Sunday, and a late comeback on the Sunday night baseball game with just an awesome home run from Ronnie Mauricio into the water. Not a splash hit. Actually, let's talk about this quickly. You're only allowed to call it a splash hit if the Giants player hits it, but not if the visiting player hits it. I'm ideologically opposed to that. If you hit the ball and it splashes, it's a splash hit, right?
Yeah, I mean, to me, the distinctions have been more about on the fly versus off the walkway or the top of the whatever. Now, it is weird, though, because they do, we've talked about this a lot, on the website, on Giants' website, they do list other ones. But the counter in right field does not add if an opposing player goes. So they are still keeping track. They are not pretending like they don't exist, but I guess they're just not calling them the official splash hit.
There's the counter. It should say Giants splash hits. But if you go on Twitter and you say that, like, Ronnie Mauricio with a splash hit, Giants fans would be like, that's not a splash hit. Only we get to have. No, he splashed it. It's a wet
that's
ball.
Ridiculous. That is ridiculous if that is indeed the case. I mean, can I just say something about the Mets that I feel like we have not talked about him at all, at least in 2 months, is Clay Holmes. I like the fact
still
that
going.
He has just posted. He's not perfect. He's only striking out 7 per 9. Should he have been an all-star? Maybe not. the fact that he has just become a totally solid 3-4 starter and you don't even have to think about it is so impressive and such a huge... And again, he's obviously regressed a little bit over the last month. That's to be expected. He has already more than doubled his innings from last season, let alone the season before, let alone the season before that, when he threw exactly 63 innings 3 years in a row, which is weird. Or I guess 63 and two-thirds. And not just that, remember how much he was throwing in October? He was throwing, I think he was on pace.
It looked
the Yankees had extended the series. He could have thrown the most appearances in postseason history. Like, this was a reliever. And the Mets were like, he's going to be a starter. We're like, what? That's ridiculous. And it has been so fine that we are never talking about it. And that in and of itself is a huge credit to him. It is a huge credit to the Mets. And if they didn't have him giving them five innings every week, like they'd really be in trouble. Because this is like the one thing they could count on, even if he isn't dominant every time out. But when he does give him quality outings like he did on Friday, they really are in good shape. So I just wanted to give Clay Holmes a little bit of love there. But what else gave you? Yeah, there you go. Season high, 104 pitches on which, again, if he threw 104 pitches with the Yankees, that'd be like, what went wrong? What's going on? Is Aaron
Boone like a month?
Why is Clay Holmes still on the mound? But
that's one inning for Brent Honeywell.
Right. I just wanted to give him some credit. But anything else on the Mets here? You know, Mets pitching, they made a trade. Also, the other major trade over the weekend, they acquired Gregory Soto from the Baltimore Orioles in exchange for a couple of pitching prospects. Wellington Arasena, who is a lower level arm who sounds pretty interesting, but him and Cameron Foster, probably relievers long term, makes sense for Baltimore to bring in some longer term arms. But Soto is... we knew the Mets were going to have to bring in some level of impact, especially from the left side. I know Brooks Raley is back, but AJ Minter being out has really made this bullpen just not very impressive from the left side at all. And Raley will help a little bit, but I think Soto really adds to the upside there. He is flawed. He will drive them crazy, just as he drove Orioles fans crazy and Tigers fans crazy and Phillies fans crazy. But I love Gregory Soto. He's been one of my favorites for a while, and I think he will help them. So I like that move.
He's the epitome of gas, no GPS. Like, there is no command here. There is some control. The difference, right? Command is you put it where you want it. Control is it goes in the zone. And it is, when he's on, like he was on Sunday Night Baseball, it's an awesome, awesome watch. The Mets are now W7 since Pablo Sanchez showed up to Citi Field. They are 1.5 games up on the Phillies. The Giants, meanwhile, they are tumbling and crumbling. 3 games back in the third wildcard spot. They've lost 8 of 10. They are just 2 games over 500. Their biggest issue is that they don't hit. They don't score runs. Rafael Devers has not helped a whole lot. He's been starting to heat up a little bit for them. He played first base over the weekend, and if you haven't seen the clips yet, just go watch the highlight package from the game. I believe it was Saturday. You know, on Saturday. Just a delightful watch. He is stumbling and bumbling. He looks like a drunk running back. It is just a circus act right there, right now. And not surprising that, you know, he does not look comfortable at first base. It does not look comfortable.
Yeah, so we will see, you know, what is that doing for them? Wherever they put Devers, however much he's stumbling and bumbling with the glove, they need to start hitting more. And this is a good pitching staff that is worthy of being taken seriously in this postseason race. But the standings tell us otherwise. They are falling behind the Reds, who we're about to talk about. They are falling, obviously, far behind San Diego and, of course, the Dodgers. And, like, This is going to be an interesting week, right? In theory, if you're Buster Posey, you're like, I traded Rafael Devers. You think I'm going to make a bigger move at the deadline? What does he think of this team? Do they find a way to be aggressive? Because I have not seen them in any really rumors about the trade deadline. Maybe I'm just not following Grant Brisby close enough. But I'm curious how they act this week. And if Posey just sits back and trusts that this lineup of famous hitters will eventually hit better, or if they actually try to do something about it.
Reds sweeping the Rays in a fascinating series that may have real implications on the deadline. The Reds got a trio of sturdy pitching performances. They take all 3 games. I think the Reds are now firmly in the mix. They are 6.5 back of the Cubs and the Brewers in the division. However, in the wild card race, they're very much in it. Just one game out of that third spot behind San Diego. Jordan, do you like what does it look like for the Reds to buy? What do they need?
That is a good question. Their trades are always, they have generally been more active in the offseason than at the deadline. We've seen them act as sellers. I think they're going to try to do something. I don't really know. Like, this is also honestly kind of like San Francisco. Like, this is a pitching staff to believe in at this point, especially if they can, you know, get Hunter Green back at some point. That is pretty big if, but obviously Lodolo's been pitching well. Chase Burns starting to settle in. Martinez was much better over the weekend. Abbott and Singer have been pretty reliable. They still need offense. That kind of applies across the board. So where that exactly fits in, there's a lot of places in their lineup they could upgrade. Do they have the appetite to aggressive? But this is the problem with this market. There's just not a lot of impact bats out there. Can you think of someone that would help?
Go get Gino. Bring him home. Bring Gino home.
Well, that and you know, C. Trent reported that they are at least considering that, and that would be certainly a fit. And that's the interesting part about them is when we talk about the fits for Gino, and now we're, you know, if we're moving the Yankees out of it, we're talking about the Mariners, we're talking about the Cubs, Astros now maybe getting in the mix because they're so injured. But the Cubs don't need Gino, right? Even the Mariners offense could use him, but it's not as desperate. Whereas the Reds, it's like, yes, that would help a lot and would be a reunion I think people would like.
Fourth worst OPS third baseman of any team in baseball. So their third baseman have combined for the fourth worst OPS. Bring Gino home. The Rays, meanwhile, maybe flipping over to sellers. Remember, this is a hyper rational front office that is not going to cling to small playoff odds. At time of recording, their odds are at 16.2% to make the playoffs, which is half of what it was, I believe, before the weekend started. We've gotten some mumblings about Yandy Diaz, Brandon Lau, Pete Fairbanks potentially being on the block. They have four games in New York against the Yankees this week. That could be spicy. We sort of saw this coming just because of all the away games that this team has to play. Their stadium situation is really wonky and makes it difficult for them. I would not be surprised if the Rays sold. It'll be fascinating to see if they try and thread the needle and do a buy sell or if they just kind of, you know, trade everybody away.
Yeah, they are literally being sold right now. So we'll see if they will also be selling their players to other teams as Stu Sternberg sells the actual franchise to, what is it, Patty Z, Patrick Zalupski
from
Jacksonville. So we will see. We got an awesome email about Patty Z that I'm not going to read right now, but if you sent that email and you're listening,
that was great.
Thank you for that. That was amazing. All right, let's get to one. Anyway,
Rangers.
Reds, let's see it. Let's see Reds, Rays. Let's see how relevant you are this week. How much are we going to be talking about you later?
Rangers sweeping the Braves. The Braves suck, dude. The Braves freaking suck. It's Spencer Strider yelling at the coaches. We had them trading for Eric Fetty. Because Grant Holmes went on the IL, and that means the whole starting opening day rotation is on the IL. What a catastrophe the Braves are. Some of it was unavoidable. Some of it was avoidable, and they stink. The Rangers have thrust themselves back into the playoff hunt. They are just a half game back of Boston for that third wildcard spot, six games over 500, riding a W6. Their offense, which has been nap time all season long, broke out for a really strong weekend, scoring 8, 6, and 8 runs in each of those three games. Feels like the Rangers are going to be aggressive this week, but they're in a really interesting spot because it's like, where do you upgrade, right? Besides the bullpen, everyone could, I would say like upgrading your bullpen is like sleeping better. Everyone could stand to do it, right? Like everyone is like, yeah, you know, I could sleep better. Like I could use another couple hours.
I agree.
Like, okay, cool.
I agree. That said, I look at the names in the bullpen and I'm like, they got to do something about this. Third in bullpen ERA. I don't know how. I'm like totally perplexed by that. But maybe
they
think
a couple
that
more
that's
hours
just fine.
To sleep.
and they're 27th in OPS. Like, can you imagine? Like, again, why are we even bothering to predict baseball? If you look at the Rangers lineup before the season, be like, yeah, so this team, 27th in OPS, and this bullpen, it's going to be third in ERA. All right, sounds good. So maybe they prioritize offense. Where exactly they could fit that in, I don't know, but I think that still seems
You look at the lineup, and it's just all these established dudes, and you're like, well, he's good. Well, that guy's pretty good. That guy's good, too. And it's like, well, okay, well, if they're all good, then who's going to play? Now, Jock Peterson, I believe, is back off the IL. Remember, he was like 0 for 75,000 to start the season. What's interesting is like, yeah, I really don't know how they upgrade. I don't know what that looks like. Maybe they package a couple of these guys and go get a big bat. But I wouldn't be shocked to see the Rangers just, you know, try and catch a couple Z's and add a reliever or two at the deadline. All right, enough of the sweeps. Let's just fly around the league here. Blue Jays take 3 out of 4 over the Tigers. Detroit was just a horrible watch. They avoid the mop with a nice 10-4 win on Sunday. The Blue Jays now have a better record than the Tigers. They are 63-43. The Tigers are 61-46. Feels like the Blue Jays are now in a position to be aggressive this week at the deadline. What do you think that looks like?
Yeah, I mean, they already were, and we just don't know how maybe uncomfortable this front office is willing to get. How much do they view this as like a World Series window? Because there's still parts of this roster you're like, this is like a World Series team? Like, really?
But it is bottom of the lineup to where is Clement, Loperfido, yeah. Heinemann, Roden. And yeah, Ernie's awesome. But no shade.
But yeah, and you know, Kirk is injured right now. So Kirk is normally the starting catcher, and he's awesome. So this is a good team, clearly. But it is also reflective of how far a solid team that is playing really well can go in an American League that can't get out of its own way. So I hope that they can add. And the contrast with the Tigers, where they were so far ahead of everyone else in the American League before playing like the worst team in baseball for 3 weeks, which of these teams is going to act more aggressive? Is it going to be the Tigers, who are responding to this brutal stretch of play where they look completely overmatched and do not have nearly enough talent? Or is it the Blue Jays, where you look at the roster and say, they still need more talent, but I don't know, would I mess with this, with these vibes where they're getting along so well and whatever buttons John Schneider is pressing now, whatever random guys they're calling up or pinch hitting and relievers that they're putting in, it's just working. So I think it's still Toronto. I think it's still more likely that Toronto is the team that adds more than Detroit, but I'd love to be wrong.
There's just more, not desperation, but there's more, like, there's more pressure there on the front office to win right now. I still think they could use a starter. Eric Lauer has been freaking awesome recently.
Yeah.
And so if they add a guy, it probably bumps Scherzer out of the rotation. And like,
you want to be the one to tell him?
It sounds like a tough conversation. They should be like, whoever, whatever starter we add has to be the person to tell Scherzer that, like, if they go out and they get Zach Gallen, like Zach Gallen has to sit Scherzer down and be like, hey, looky here, bruh. I don't think they're going to add to the offense in Toronto because they're going to do the, well, we're going to get Alejandro Kirk, Andres Jimenez, Anthony Santander, and Dalton Varsho off the IL, and that'll be like a deadline acquisition, which honestly, when it's that many guys, that holds some water to me. One other thing is Alek Manoah is out there somewhere doing rehab starts. Red Sox take 2 out of 3 over the Dodgers this weekend. Dodgers win that first game. Red Sox battle back, winning game 2 and game 3. Mookie Betts was not there the first game. He had a personal matter. Game 2, he comes in and pinch hits at the end. K's looking to end the game. And then the Red Sox take the third one with a big homer from Alex Bregman. Dude, Bregman in the Red Sox uniform, it's so perfect. Like, I really do hope he plays there forever. It's such a good fit.
Yeah, it does. It's just like, yeah, that's probably where he should be. And he's been exactly what they could have hoped. And it's just a reminder of how much they missed him when he was out. Kind of a weird moment in the Sunday game where Chapman, who has essentially never been hurt, left with some sort of back injury, and Jordan Hicks had to come in for the 5-out save. It sounds like it's not serious. So, yeah, you know, Mookie, of course, has a tough moment at the end. It sounds like he said that his stepdad passed away, and that's why he was away from the team to go be with his family. But, of course, I guess he only missed that brief time, comes back. And yeah, the Dodgers, I don't know. It felt like on Friday they were maybe with that win. Sheehan looked good. Teoscar maybe heating up. That would be huge for the offense, I would say, because he's really been not what they hoped. They got Blake Snell coming back this week. I think that's good news.
They already have Blake Treinen come back.
Blake Treinen's back. Is what are they going to do with Dustin May, who's now been in trade rumors? Their pitching staff was already a nebulous situation, obviously, even more so now as they build up Ohtani and as they maybe make some trades this week. So Dodgers, I'm sure we will continue to talk about them. One more series we wanted to mention just based on some news that we got last night is the Royals taking 2 out of 3 over the Guardians. They had a doubleheader on Saturday where Jonathan India hit a walk-off homer off Class A. Guardians bounce back in the nightcap and win that one. But on Sunday, Noah Cameron throws well and Mike Kelly to homer. Royals win 4-1. So Cleveland's still kind of floating in the middle. They've played better. Are they going to be sellers, buyers? I don't know. Royals are acting in sort of a strange manner. They are still under 500, but, and Chris Bubich is now in the IL with rotator cuff injury. That's not good. And so it's like, oh, could they be sellers? Seth Lugo. Could they trade Seth Lugo? Nope. Not going to do that. They extended Seth Lugo for 2 years and $46 million. And they traded for Randall Grichuk. So I think this does kind of reflect what I assume the Royals would do, which is they're like, listen, this has not been a good season. We understand we're probably not going to make it, but we are not taking huge steps back. We still believe in this team. And even if it doesn't happen this year, we would like to have pieces that can help us next year. Now, Randall Grichuk, yeah. I guess you're just giving your outfield some sort of element that can help for some sort of miracle run down the stretch. But Seth Lugo is more of a commitment to something moving forward, and I can understand that decision.
That is good news for teams holding starting pitching that want to trade him, trade their starting pitchers here at the deadline, because that is just another piece that's off the market. Right, so I would imagine with Lugo not being traded, that means Mitch Keller and Zach Gallen and Sandy Alcantara are going to get a little bit more buzz. Yeah, the Royals are they're weird, man. That's a weird team. Guardians, still fascinated what they do at the deadline. I think they and the Rays are going to end up being pretty similar. I think the Guardians still think that they're good. Like, I think the Guardians believe in themselves more than the Rays do. Mm-hmm. Right now,
I think that is correct.
I think that that will influence how they operate. All right, let's take a break. When we get back, we will briefly talk about Hall of Fame weekend, which made me cry, and then run through the rest of the games from the weekend, including Orioles over the Rockies, which also made me cry. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Before we do Hall of Fame weekend, a quick reminder to you beautiful folks that we will be doing a live trade deadline show this Thursday, July 31st at 5:30 PM Eastern time. We will be on. You will get to watch us react to trades as they roll in half hour before the deadline. It's going to be a grand old time, so make sure you put that on your schedule and tune it.
My official prediction is that we will be reacting to a very large closer trade in those final 30 minutes. Mm. That feels like it's sort of reflective of what Ken Rosenthal wrote about today. I think the closers are going to be the guys we are talking about, whether it's Bednar, Clase, Duran, you know, Jack's reliever, Helsley. I feel like that's where we're heading. We will see Anthony Bender. Oh, the Anthony Bender trade is going to we're going to freak out, and you're going to get to watch it live on your social media.
Who is the guy I freaked out about a couple years ago when we did this reaction and Sarah Langst thought it was the funniest thing of all time?
It was, oh my God, I can't believe I'm forgetting.
He was with the Mariners.
He was with the Mariners. It was, this is so bad because now I'm going to go back and watch that. And Sarah, if you're listening, I'm sorry for forgetting because it's been, that's so bad. Who was it? It was with the Mariners because then he went to the Mets and now I can't remember who it is. This is, you've totally derailed me because forgetting this is like so bad because it's one of my favorite clips ever when I used to reveal the trades to Jake and we can't remember it. So that is really embarrassing, but that's what happens. So tune in. You'll see us forget all kinds of other stuff and react to stuff in person. Is it 2 years ago? Was it 3 years ago? All right. Thank you for ruining my morning, Jake, by me.
Dominic Leone.
Dominic Leon. Jay goes, Dominic Leon, no way. All right, let's get to the Hall of Fame weekend. We had 5 inductees on the player side. Billy Wagner.
Great CC class.
Sabathia, Ichiro inducted by the Writers Veterans Committee, voting in Dave Parker and Dick Allen posthumously. Sadly, of course, for Dave Parker, who passed away recently. We're not going to go through all of them. These speeches were great. I haven't watched the speeches live in a few years, but this class was so good. And of course, this is true every year. The contrast of the journeys and styles and careers of all the people going in together. It is really cool that they just kind of, by circumstance and the nature of the process, end up going in together and will associate them together. And I think this class in particular, it will endure in that way. These three very, very different players from a similar era in Wagner and CC and Ichiro, who mean so much to such specific communities, not to mention massive groups of people across the world. And then, of course, Dave Parker and Dick Allen, who had their representatives of their family, Dick Allen's widow, and, of course, Dave Parker's son. Really, really memorable. Really, really cool. Any other just highlights from those speeches you wanted to shout out?
Well, just a major takeaway was to have Parker and Sabathia together was very interesting. Kind of these two titans of Black baseball from two completely different eras. And when you hear the way that people talk about them, it sounds similar, right? The players that looked up to Dave Parker at the end of his career that he played with, Eric Davis, Barry Larkin, Gary Sheffield, saying that to see have that guy there, that was important to me. And then you had CeCe talking about how for him, watching baseball and seeing Black players that looked like him, how that was important. And now CeCe is that for kind of the next generation in a lot of ways. And it was just cool to have those two stories being told up on the same podium at the same time. And of course, the Ichiro speech, I mean, just an all-timer. The shade to Miami was incredible, incredible. I had never heard of him, which is not true. Like, let's be real. Obviously, Ichiro had heard of the Marlins at that point. That was a joke. It's a great joke. Banger of a joke. Joke hit. Just a great backhanded compliment. And then Billy Wagner, who is so important to us as D3 dorks, Division III baseball, to see D3 on the plaque in bronze.
Dude, so I was thinking about this. Like, I wonder if the phrase Division I even appears on, like, any, maybe some, who else it's in implied. Cooperstown would even be referencing this? Honestly, it's probably more likely that is there any Division II in the Hall of Fame? I feel like there is. Off the top of my head, I feel like there was one recently that I'm blanking on. But anyway, the point is that's such a big part of Billy Wagner's story, and his speech was great too. And honestly, that was one of the parts where he got the most emotional when he was like, you know, the fact that you know, someone that's 5 foot nothing who played Division III baseball in the middle of nowhere could be a Hall of Famer is really special to him. And as someone who, you know, you wrote an awesome story about his college career and knowing people that actually faced him, like, and know what it was like at that point and understanding where Ferrum College is and knowing that that place still means so much to him today, still where he's, you know, around.
Dude,
still a coach and a very relevant person. Yeah.
You saw the picture of the Ferrum jersey in the exhibit. In the Billy Wagner exhibit, like, dude, for those who don't know, Ferrum, there are 1,300 people in the freaking town, let alone the college, okay? And, like, the idea that Billy Wagner's Hall of Famer is just so cool. One of my favorite stats of all time, one of my favorite fun facts, the top 3 K-per-9 seasons in NCAA history, they are all 3 of Billy Wagner's seasons. He was dominant in a way that no one has ever been at that level. And congratulations to him. Congratulations to all of the inductees. No congratulations to John Jay and Manny Machado.
All right. We have more baseball to talk about before we say goodbye. Let's go fast.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
Cardinals and Padres split a 4-game set. This one got messy. We're not going to go kind of beat by beat here. the upshot is players were hit. Teams assumed it was intentional when it wasn't. Then people, this always happens, right? It's like, you hit me on purpose. And then the pitcher's like, no, I didn't. Why are you mad that I hit you? And then it just explodes into this childish tete-a-tete showdown on the infield. This one was particularly weird because you had Manny Machado and John Jay yelling at each other. John Jay, who is a coach for the Cardinals. These two dudes, both from Miami, used to be tight. There is a 2017 article in the Players Tribune where it is Yonder Alonso, Manny Machado's brother-in-law, John Jay and Machado like pinching each other's cheeks and like having a grand old time together. Like these guys were family. After the game, they asked Machado about it. And Machado's like, I know the real him. Like, we're not friends anymore. And then Yonder Alonso, MLB Network employee, tweets out an emoji of a rat. Spicy. What happened here? Yeah. I asked around, couldn't figure it out. Relationship frayed in public, very messy. Just, this is the type of thing, Jordan, where like, this drama, not for me. I don't really want any part of this. I hope everyone's happy and okay. I understand that there are people in the world and in the baseball world who want every last detail of this thing. And so if that's you, I hope you get what you're looking for.
No, it is definitely interesting. Padres have been not awesome recently, but they are still hanging on there. I still expect the Cardinals to be sellers. Let's go to Cubs versus White Sox. Cubs take 2 out of 3. They do get crushed on Friday. Imanaga just got blasted. The White Sox had a season high 18 hits, but the Cubs pitchers really bounced back over those next couple days. Cade Horton was fantastic. Ben Brown was very good. So the Cubs managed to win this series. We will see what they do this week. But the White Sox, they had that moment on Friday. I'm sure those Southsiders fans were enjoying it. I'm sure the Pope enjoyed that one. I hope he was locked in.
Also, Jordan, do you know who threw out the first pitch? I believe it was on Saturday at this game. Manchester Nope. United footballer Bruno Fernandes. Bruno Fernandes, the Portuguese guy. You know, this is the time of year when all the soccer teams are in America, like playing games. So, like, go and do first pitches. He threw a first pitch. It bounced in the other batter's box. Great reminder that some of the best athletes in the world who have never thrown a baseball or really thrown before. Don't throw very well. So that happened at the rate.
I'm sure Bruno was just like, man, it's just a weird name. Just a weird name for a place to play sports. The rate. What is this place called?
Is this the Theophy of Dreams?
Let's go slightly north to Milwaukee, where the Fightin' Fish are staying hot, folks. Kyle Stowers homers again. On Friday, Jansen Junk and Tyler Phillips cover all 9 innings. Heriberto Hernandez goes yard on Saturday and Sunday. It looked like the Marlins were going to sweep the Brewers on the road, but the Brew Crew fight back. Blake Perkins walks it off, and they don't get
swept. None of that, though. None of that matters because the Brewers did an alumni home run derby on the field after this game on Saturday. I have never seen anything like this. This is remarkable. It was an unbelievable watch with some of the biggest names in recent Brewers history. Eric Thames. Wow, I'm rusty. Eric Thames, Niger Morgan, Prince Fielder, Carlos Gomez, Ryan Braun, like Jonathan Broxton. No, that's Keon Broxton.
Dude, Keon Broxton. And hello, you're skipping the best one. Yovani Gallardo, one of the best hitting pitchers that we've had in the 21st century. He even hit a couple of homers, and yes, Keon Broxton. It was such a perfect, like, I guess maybe every team could do some version of this. It just feels like the Brewers had the most perfect collection of
best
still
energy.
In shape, amazing both personalities and career achievements. Dude, it was just so amazing. So disappointing weekend in terms of the results of, you know, losing a series at home to the Marlins, although the Marlins don't suck, as we know. Still, the vibes for this alumni derby were spectacular.
Corey Hart was just ripping balls. Every team should have some version of this. It was an absolute no-brainer win. Mariners and the Angels split a best-of-4 series. Cal Raleigh, 2 more freaking home runs. Julio's starting to heat up a little bit. He homers. on Friday and on Saturday. Any other major takeaways from this?
No, I mean, you know, disappointing. The Mariners have not played well in Anaheim recently, and so that has been frustrating. And their two losses in this one were tough. You would hope to be making up more ground on a struggling Astros team this weekend, but I believe they are still four back and now tied with the Rangers. So same record as the Rangers. I still expect and the Angels, like, who knows what they're going to do. But I think the Mariners will add a reliever or two before Thursday's deadline. You know, four games are weird series oftentimes, and this was no exception. Nice to see Julio get going. Cal Raleigh has 41 home runs. How much more of a lead can he gain on Aaron Judge while he is out? That is a thing to watch over the next 10 days.
Nationals take 2 out of 3 over the Twins in Minnesota. Fun game for Alex Call on Saturday. He hits a home run. He has like his whole family there. He's from Wisconsin, I believe, just over the border there. The Twins are now 6 back. They should just sell, guys. Just sell. Don't sell. Sell the whole team, in fact. Sell the team at the deadline.
Yeah. Be like the Rays. Learn from the Rays here. Sell the team and sell the your good players. That would be ideal. Twins, yuck. Okay, Orioles take 2 out of 3 over the Rockies. Awful loss on Friday for Baltimore, where it was really just a reminder of how bad this season has gone, but they do bounce back in epic fashion on Saturday. 18-0, largest shutout in franchise history. Trevor Rogers continues to dominate. Good for him. You get a solid Sugano start on Sunday. Tyler O'Neill heating up for no reason right now. It's like, great, awesome. This is really saving the season, Tyler O'Neill. Maybe you can do it next year when the Orioles are maybe good again. Rockies, again, they're right. They've been playing a lot better, Saturday aside. This is going to be close. I don't think it is any... It is no longer a guarantee that they have more losses than the White Sox. I think this is actually going to be something we are tracking very closely in September.
Last series, Pirates over the Diamondbacks. Taking 2 out of 3. Skeens on Sunday was, what a surprise, really good. Zach Gallen was bad in that Sunday start. We previewed that a little bit. Could this be kind of the last opportunity for him to showcase his skills and get traded at the deadline? That was not the case. He was, yeah. The Diamondbacks, that's it, dude. You're 4 games under 500. Thanks for the memes. They got 3 in this week in Detroit. Time to say goodbye. That's our show. Appreciate you listening to it. Jordan, thanks for listening to the show. That means a lot. Other things that mean a lot. Our deadline live show means a lot to us, and it will mean a lot to you when you get to tune in and watch us mouths agape, souls aghast, shocked,
Dominic
surprised.
Leone! Whoa! So who is it Phil Maton? He's too good. There will be some reliever that is not as good as the closers I mentioned earlier that does get traded in those final 30 minutes. And we will recreate Dominic Leone together because we will both be finding out at the same time. It will not just be me informing Jake, and it will be a grand old time. So 5:30 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. We will, of course, have another show before then on Wednesday. So you can look forward to that. I'm sure we'll have a couple trades to talk about by then. But if not, then boy, are these teams really procrastinating. Until then, thank you to Andrew Hartz and TJ Brassel for producing. As always, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. And we will talk to you later this week. Bye, friends.